All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Thank you so much for joining us here this Thursday. It's March the 10th. Well, not here. It's actually Friday the 11th down in Australia. We'll talk about that in a second here. But obviously, there's no secret here that Russia and Ukraine have stolen the conflict there, have stolen much of the attention. In fact, we showed a New York Times headline just the other day where it says, we'll forget about the pandemic. And that's a great thing. And they used a graphic of a guy vacuuming up the COVID molecule from a guy's brain. True story. That's how insane it is. But we should not forget. We can't forget. We cannot just walk away from this and pretend that the last 2 years didn't happen. There's many countries that have gone through, I mean, amazing tyrannical processes and just everything up in the air. All the freedoms went out the door. The coercion when it comes to the vaccine, pushing the vaccine, coercive measures. We found out even in the U.S. now that the government had been paying media companies literally billions of dollars to push the vaccine. I mean, crazy stuff, right? But one country that's been on the front lines of this ever since it started is, of course, Australia. And that's what we're going to focus on here today and talk more about the situation there. And basically just kind of reassess and look at what happened over the last 2 years and ensure that we can't forget about this. We can't just turn our backs on this and now something else, bigger stories in the news. I mean, as far as I know, these are still running. Many of the Five Eyes countries, they have still, you know, Canada, New Zealand, Australia, UK, and the U.S., there's still measures there in place. Some countries are fortunately doing away with them, but there's still the vaccine issue. They're pushing. Maybe some countries have walked away from the vaccine passport, but they're still pushing a digital ID, which I believe eventually will merge into a kind of a social credit score of sorts. So there's a lot of things still up in the air and things that the global elite is still going to push for. When it comes to, you know, using the COVID situation, right? But we'll see. Maybe, who knows? Maybe a new strain will pop up just here next week. We'll see what happens. Anything is possible at this point. So anyway, we have a great guest with us from xyz.net.au down in Australia, of course. David Hiscox, he is a great journalist. He's writing a lot of pieces and just covering what's going on down there. Thank you for joining us, David. It's good to see you. Thank you for coming on.
It's an absolute pleasure, Henrik. Thank you for having me on. Thank you for the work that you and your team have been doing for years and years and years. I also want to say thank you for using XYZ as a resource. That's been greatly appreciated for our views. And thank you for your work. You were part of the Malou, which helped to red pill me on race.
Oh, fantastic.
Back in the glory days of 2017. Back in the days of the glory days of 2016 and 2017.
Yeah, I remember that. It was a different lifetime ago.
Back when we were all on YouTube and we and Facebook and the algorithm was just letting us just get to hundreds of thousands of people, and we thought all we had to do was make fun of the left, elect a few politicians, and we'd win.
Yeah, well, boy, were we surprised.
Yeah. I thought that we already would have retaken Constantinople by now. maybe Russia will get there in a few months' time.
Yeah, exactly. Give them time. I think that was part of some prophecy or something, right, for the Messiah to return. It was for Russia or some country, I guess. It was Russia to retake Constantinople, yeah. I think it was. But
yes, it's just a matter of months away. We were just a little bit behind. Or maybe we were ahead.
Yeah, exactly, right. All right, so, there's plenty to talk about here. Again, just the basic outline here is like what the hell happened in Australia over the last 2 years, and that we're going to talk about. Briefly, before we get into that, xyz.net.au, tell us about the website. When did you start it? You cover a lot of, not only, of course, the COVID stuff, but that's been so dominating specifically in Australia. But tell us a bit about the site when you started.
Sure. I started back in 2015 with a bunch of people who had been helping me to argue against all my lefty friends on Facebook. And we thought, well, rather than arguing with our friends, let's argue with the rest of Australia. So we started up a website. So back in those days, I was basically a liberal. I thought I was conservative or a libertarian, but I was still a liberal. I thought the Liberal Party here in Australia, which is our Conservative Party, but is Liberal. I thought they were going to sort everything out, but throughout 2016, 2017, 2018, as Brexit happened, as Trump was re-elected, and as the Reclaim Australia movement here in Australia kind of dissipated, I came to understand that there is no political solution.
Yeah.
It's not just the bad Muslims, or it's not just Muslims, it's what's going on is that there's an international cabal trying to replace us, and that's the big issue here.
Yeah.
And then I got to see how they are able to control information and control the politics, and understood that it's a much longer game than I thought it was back then. So, yeah, you would have seen the XYZ sort of transition from sort of, I guess, normie conservative through to nationalist. And we've been covering a lot of the COVID stuff, and it's like there's a pipeline of libertarian to nationalist to Christian as well. And
right.
So it's a whole bunch of us who've been contributing to the site have gone through that transformation.
Right. Awesome. No, it's a great resource. A lot of good articles there. And when I was trying to find stuff in Australia, what was happening, or certain politicians and stuff, you know, I was lucky to find your source. So good work on that. So basically, you know, you can approach this however you want to. You know, we have clips from some of the crazy people down there, right? The people who's tied to the World Economic Forum, the usual suspects, Rockefeller Foundation. They have their little resilient cities, you know, in Melbourne, which has been, you know, crazy to see, right? The heart of darkness in Australia over the last year and a half, to be sure, right? But I don't know. Summarize the situation. What the hell happened, and how quickly did it turn that way once, you know, the pandemic broke out and all that, and the world was changed after that point?
Yeah, well, a lot of us who are not plugged into the mainstream media, when COVID first came out, I think we all thought that this was going to be the apocalypse and there were going to be hundreds of millions of people who were going to die. And then after a month or so, I was a bit late to the party, but basically we all realized that, no, this is a big hoax and it's all being put on. And so we started to see the massive protests over in Europe against the lockdowns. But here in Australia, despite the fact that we had some of the harshest lockdowns, especially here in Melbourne, we were just a little bit slow to get going. Throughout 2020, there were some good-sized protests, but there were hundreds of people, maybe like a few thousand at most. And because the intel of the Victoria Police in particular was so good, it was hard for protesters to meet at any point and really launch a big protest, and they would always get like lots and lots of police. They would overwhelm the protesters with police, kettle them, surround them, and just pick them all off one by one. And so that's why I supplied one of those photos, one of those amazing photos. One of the things that they did to organize protests was go, well, one of the few places that we're allowed to go, because there was a 5 kilometer radius that we were allowed. One of the few places we were allowed to go was supermarkets. And so a whole bunch of them met up at the Vic Market, which is close to Melbourne, right on the north edge of Melbourne's central business district. And they launched a protest against the vaccine mandates. And so naturally the government sent in the fully armed and operational robocops. And so there we can see them storming the vegetable aisle.
I remember this. I remember that clip and seeing them running. There were normal, like regular shoppers there, just like you're picking their fruit and vegetables, while the cops are chasing around certain people and trying to, you know. And I think they arrested a bunch of people there too during that.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Yes, I wrote a satire piece basically saying it was a great tomato massacre of 2020.
Was that 2020?
That was 2020, yeah.
Jeez, I tell you, some of the years blurred together. Like, was that 2021?
Absolutely.
Or, I mean, it's crazy, but yeah. And go on.
Yeah, so I remember at the end of 2020, because winter ended and COVID cases went down, strangely enough. And so I remember getting some beautiful reactions. Like, I almost did it on purpose just to see what people's reactions would do. I would say, oh, well, watch out for the next lockdown. And people would just swivel around and just glare at you. But sure enough, the next round of lockdowns happened. The start of 2021 here in Victoria, we actually got a little bit of a reprieve, because Daniel Andrews fell down the stairs. There were a lot of rumors going around that he was helped down the stairs due to certain actions that he took. But yeah, for the first 6 months or so, we didn't have the lockdowns here in Victoria in particular weren't too bad. But then he got back in power, winter hit, and bang, we were locked away for a very, very long time. And so that's when we really got to see the anti-lockdown protest movement here in Victoria in particular really heat up. We were seeing regular big protests in the other states, in the capital cities. Like there were tens of thousands on a regular basis, every weekend basically marching through the city. And the media would always refer to it as just hundreds, but it was always thousands, tens of thousands. And so then we finally started to get some really big protests here in Victoria. And so they were meeting up, in the CBD. The Victorian government responded with full force. Like they had police with rubber bullets, and they were firing rubber bullets at close range against unarmed peaceful protesters. And so that was the first real indication that we saw that they weren't messing around. Like we compare that to how they treated the Black Lives Matter protests the year before, where they were literally burning down cities and they were referring to them as peaceful protests. Protesters. Ordinary people would turn up in the city and the government and the media would refer to them as basically just scoundrels and people who are violent and who are... that footage.
Yeah, I remember that. Crazy, huh?
So, they were literally pushing down old ladies and they broke that lady's hip. And then they put out a misinformation story saying that it was a guy who was dressed as an old lady pretending to... They were putting out all sorts of stories. In Sydney, there was a guy who there were police forces coming at him, and so he just put his hand out just to sort of... fend them away. And so they took a still photo of him with his hand out like that. And his hand was, the side of his hand was resting against the side of the horse's face. And so they all put out this story that a man punched a horse and they actually arrested the guy, which is ironic given that like over in Canada when a woman actually got trampled by a horse and nearly died.
Exactly.
They ignored that.
Yep.
The footage that you showed there of people breaking through the police barricade, that was quite interesting too.
I remember that point. It was like this fever, like it was just people had just had enough at that point. I remember that. And I forget how many took part, but I mean, they were protest after protest after protest. And you know, we should recognize it too. We saw that in a lot of other countries. France had it. The UK had it. There was Germany. They had huge protest. And so it was not just Australia, but there was, it was early there because the measures were just so harsh and so ridiculous out the gates, right? Here's, I guess, Finland here. There's some compilation here. But anyway, go on, David.
Yeah, it's important to point out, basically 2021 was basically Australia catching up to the rest of the world. Because we've been saying throughout 2020, like, when are Australians going to actually wake up? And, you know, like, we're just too easygoing. You know, she'll be right, mate. 2021, like, we finally got organized. Going back to the footage of people pushing through the police barricade, what was interesting was that the weeks that the government had used rubber bullets on peaceful protesters, there were several thousand people at those protests and they pushed through police barricades. They pushed through once outside Flinders Street Station. And then they pushed through another barricade outside of Parliament House in Victoria. And what was really interesting about that was that they pushed through the police barricade outside Parliament House, but then the crowd proceeded to run away from Parliament House. I was always commenting at the time, hey, Parliament House is that way, guys. but, you know, that never happened. So maybe we never had our January 6th incident. I don't know. the following weekend, the police blocked off the entire city. They had barricades. They described it as a ring of steel around the entire CBD. Mm-hmm. So they congregated sort of around Richmond Q, which is just to the east of the central business district. And so that road, they played a game of cat and mouse with the police for several hours. And then the police knew what they were doing, that they herded them into that little spot where it's basically a gorge. Like there are high walls on either side and the police blocked them off at one end and then they blocked them off at the other.
Yeah.
The protesters realized, hey, we're locked in. So we've got to get out of here. So that was really, really That was special. That was great to watch. Like, there's some footage here. You could see that there was one guy who realized, hey, I've got to help my fellow man get out of here. So he just went to each police officer, just made sure that they couldn't stop them. And yeah, he wasn't violent. Like, he just got rid of one, got rid of another. He didn't, like, kick them on the ground or anything like that. Like, he just kept going.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then this footage here, this is amazing. This footage of, this is the tradies, the construction workers.
Yeah.
They were protesting against the vaccine mandate for the construction industry. So these were a different type of people to the usual anti-lockdown protesters. Usual anti-lockdown protesters were, you know, people like us, people who are sort of politically engaged. There are a lot of mums and dads involved, a lot of women sort of trying to lead the whole thing. But these guys were men, and these weren't just men. These were men, real men.
Working guys.
Working class guys.
Yep.
Yeah. And so when these guys get angry, they get angry, and they don't have the kinds of socially engineered restraints that are put on a middle class guy like me, myself, for example. It was tremendous. That it started on the start of the weekend, where they were just doing a sit-in, like just blocking off trams and that sort of stuff. And it escalated. It just went throughout the weekend. Then by the start of the next week, they went to the offices of the CMFEU, Construction Mining Forestry Union. I can't remember the exact name. Because what was going on was that they were like, hey, we don't want to take this vaccine. It's untested. It's dangerous. Why isn't the union supporting us? The trade union, that's the major trade union here in Victoria, they were in lockstep with the Labor Party, with Daniel Andrews, over vaccine mandates. And so they were furious. They were like, you should be on our side, but you're taking the side of the government. And so naturally things got out of hand. They managed to get in. They had a lot of fun inside the offices. And that was really, really a pivotal moment, because that was one of the few times that I've really seen any protests around the world go to one of the hearts of power, one of the key nodes of power, because the Labor Party, the Socialist, the Marxist Party here in Australia, one of its key sources of power and funding and manpower is the labor movement. And so the guys who are running the labor movement, they're not representing the workers. They're the guys who are the cronies of the Labor Party people. They all help each other. They scratch each other's back. And so what we had here was the key manpower and source of income as well, through union dues, of the Labor Party, of the government in power, its own people were basically rebelling against it. They went nuts as well. Like, over the following days, they marched all over the city. They literally went up onto the freeways. They went up onto the biggest bridge in Melbourne.
And I remember that, yeah.
And some of the footage that doesn't get shown actually of that day, because then they kept marching back down the freeway. The police, like, they had, like, just a line of, like, the fully armed police with rubber bullets again, and they just shot them all down. There were reports of terrible injuries. Like, there's stuff that hasn't even got on the media, where, like, just disgusting injuries which have happened to people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Intriguingly, the government, they responded by shutting down the entire construction industry for a few weeks, which was pretty full on, because the construction industry is one of the ways that the government keeps the economy going, because we've outsourced a lot of our industry. But then to fill all the buildings that they build, they need to bring in the mass immigration. So it's part of that key cycle of how we're replaced, how they keep the fake economy going.
Yeah.
Center of power. So they very quickly backed down on the construction vaccine mandate, and those protests dissipated. But the protests continued, and it wasn't too long after that the government basically dropped the lockdowns, because I think what would have happened was that somebody would have said to Daniel Andrews, if you keep this lockdown going, eventually the police here are going to kill somebody because they were doing all sorts of things. Like there's footage of police smashing rifle butts into people's spines. There's that footage of the police officer who slammed a guy into the concrete for no reason.
I remember that. Yep.
Yeah.
I think he was charged, that officer, or he was...
Yes, he has been charged.
Okay, good.
And now the media are happy to show the footage over and over and over again now that the lockdowns are all over.
Yep.
What was happening was that the police were allowed to get more and more violent, but there was no pushback. In the past, when police have been violent against protesters, it's been against lefty protesters. So the media pipes up, all the institutions of civil society pipe up, like the academia, the lawyers, they all push back against police brutality. But there was none of that. They were all on their side, strangely enough, for this. So the police were just escalating and escalating with nothing to contain them. And so, it was getting to the point where if it had continued, they would have killed somebody and then the optics of that would have been awful. If you're happy for me to keep going, I'll keep summarizing it.
Definitely. Yeah, keep going. I just want to hear, overall of, what happened and all the big events and stuff like that. And overall, has there been any, I assume you kind of, you obviously keep an eye on the mainstream and the discourse in Australia and stuff. Has there been any discussion of like reflection over this? Was it worth it? Was it really that bad? Was it necessary, all these things? Has there been any kind of soul searching, I guess, to try to figure out about this? What would you say?
That's an excellent question. Before I go into what happened after lockdown, that's a great question. So we've got essentially controlled opposition conservative media here in Australia. Sky News, they have presented some good viewpoints.
Yeah, they have some things here and there that are decent. It's like, well, I'll take it. It's better than nothing, but never all the way.
Every now and then something gets through the gatekeepers. Like there's a Liberal Party MP, I can't remember his name, but he was actually pointing out that there have been all these adverse reactions. But what would happen was that they would question the need for the lockdowns. They would question the handling of the lockdowns. They would question the type of medication. They would ask, why isn't ivermectin being allowed, that sort of stuff. But they would never question the overall narrative of COVID itself. They would never go, hey, you've just replaced the flu figures with COVID figures.
Yeah.
They would never question the idea that we have a worldwide pandemic which requires worldwide coordinated government response. I wrote a piece towards the end of, I might have even been 2020, called Peter Credlin and Daniel Andrews are on the same side. Peter Credlin used to be a chief staffer for Tony Abbott, who was Australia's former Liberal Prime Minister. And she was working for Sky News, and there was a point where she basically just destroyed Daniel Andrews by asking some just proper journalistic questions about the handling of the lockdown in 2020. And several ministers just disappeared. I think even a police commissioner was replaced at one point or something like that. So she took a few scalps, and so all the conservatives got to go, oh, look at that. Peter Credlin is giving Daniel Andrews a hard time finally. Maybe we should elect a prime minister. But it was all reinforcing that COVID narrative that it's a pandemic that needs this response. And it also sort of reinforced the idea that the media pushes back and that there's a political solution to all this.
Yeah.
That's my answer to your question. That was the nature of the mainstream pushback. It went to a certain point, but then it stopped.
Yeah, as usual. And the question is, what's going to happen in terms of are all restrictions gone now all over Australia, or are there any areas that have certain things in place still?
You can't get a job in Australia without a vaccine.
Okay, there you go. All right, so it's 100% the main thing that came after all of this. And again, I think personally that Look, I'm not saying that they're not tinkering with things in labs and the things get out. And, you know, we have been open, by the way, we've been sick this and last year more than ever. I mean, there's some stuff we caught, and I don't know what it is. I don't want to go get a PCR swab up my nose or whatever. And who knows? Maybe this is, and we've talked about this too. Maybe this is because of the rollout of the vaccine in and of itself that's producing, you know, people are basically turning into little machines, you know, to produce this supposed spiked protein and things like that. So maybe there's shedding, maybe there's other things going on. So I'm not trying to say that nothing happened, but it is interesting that, you know, and I've been over these points over and over again, but in 2020, it looked like we had a lot of just inflated numbers. It looked like they just took a lot of other illnesses and deaths and just put them into the COVID category to drive up fear, which then resulted in, okay, well, this is obviously the problem here. What's the solution? Well, the solution is the vaccine, right? And piggybacking on the vaccine, that's bad in and of itself with the adverse events and all the side effects and the deaths. And I mean, that's crazy. Someone needs to be criminally held liable for this, right? You saw the FDA report, the 9 pages of adverse events that were leaked, right? In the U.S., they tried to cover this up for 75 years, and luckily a federal judge came out and just like, no, you're not doing that. Release those pages now. And what we got here a couple of weeks ago, 9 pages of like all kinds of weird things, right? So anyway, but the point is, then on the back of that, as you said, you have the vaccine passport, you have probably a digital ID, which is going to lead to a social credit score. So all these kind of these globalist ideas that have been floating around in the ether for some time, but not quite sure how we're going to bring this about. It all convenient just, you know, floated right on that COVID boat or whatever we want to call it, right?
Absolutely. Basically, to repeat what you just said, but sort of put it in the Australian context. Absolutely. Like in 2020, the flu disappeared, and even mentioned that they would discuss, oh, why is it that the flu has disappeared? And they would come up with all sorts of crazy reasons. But people were putting out stories saying that like their grandmother had died and their doctor had pressured them to say it was COVID. And as you say, in 2021, they haven't needed to inflate these figures. Basically, they've had all these people getting sick, and a lot of them seem to match up with getting the vaccines, but then they blame it on COVID. Both anecdotal evidence and actual evidence. Well, anecdotal is just, you know, evidence is just anecdotal times 1,000. I personally know 3 family members who had adverse reactions within a week. But none of them would have gone on the figures. One had blood clots, which was blamed on other medication. Another had the muscles around their heart were
pericarditis, right?
Pericarditis.
Yeah.
And he saw a doctor recently who said, yeah, they were probably just a little bit wary of like saying it was because of the vaccine. So he basically admitted it. Yeah. And I had another family member had an anaphylactic reaction the next day rather than 4 hours later. So that wasn't counted. So I personally know of 3 adverse reactions which wouldn't have gone on the figures. And other family members have said that there were 10 to 20 people that they know through their network who had adverse reactions. So you just multiply that across Australia. And then it was actually letters that doctors received from, I think, APRA, who's the regulatory agency for doctors here in Australia, basically said that if you put out information on social media or say stuff to your patients which goes against essentially the approved narrative, you will be deregistered. So basically doctors were threatened with getting the sack for actually telling the truth about what was happening.
It's incredible.
In one of the protests, there was a protest in Adelaide where there were some nurses protesting, and one of these nurses was interviewed and she stated that the hospitals were full of people having adverse reactions. And if you go on Telegram, there's a Telegram page. I think it's now called Nurses and Doctors Speak Out, and it's got hundreds, thousands of personal testimonies of people who are working in the healthcare industry who are just talking about the adverse reactions that they see both from the staff and from people coming in, and the reaction of the higher-ups to basically block any of this making it through to the mainstream media.
Yeah, it's incredible. Yeah, I'm playing a little bit of the footage here. That's one of the nurses I remember speaking out, and I think she even got into ivermectin and things like that too. Right? I think forbidden cures that people have been looking at as a way out of this, right?
Yeah, it's a conspiracy theory, but not in India.
Yeah. No, exactly. Right. They did great. I mean, the most of the mRNA, this new gene therapy, people call it a vaccine. Technically, it's not, but they had to change the definition for that. But let's, for the sake of simplicity here, the COVID vaccine has mostly been for the Western world. I mean, and then at the same time, we were charged for being racist, right? Because we didn't give this up or whatever. But then you look at people like Bill Gates, you know, who's behind Gavi and all these major, you know, NGOs and groups that have funded, you know, the production of the vaccine and stuff. They refused to give up the patents for this thing, right? They kept talking about it. So it's like, well, give up the patents then and make sure that you can produce it in the second and first world or whatever. But they never did that, right? Or the third world, I should say, second and third world. This is mostly, as far as I see, has been a bioweapon attack on the Western population overall. That's kind of how I view it right now.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. I spoke to a guy, I can't remember his name, who was claiming that COVID itself is a bioweapon, and that's still possible. But even he said that the vaccine is just as much the bioweapon. And so that's what we've seen, at the very least in 2021, we've seen a bioweapon attack against us.
Let me play this clip. This could be interesting. Just in terms of what you're speaking about, I forget all the details about it, but I believe it was 79,000 deaths in Australia because of the COVID vaccine. Here's 7 News. Listen to this here.
Well, doctors say the benefits far outweigh the risks, but as the vaccine rollout now ramps up through the booster phase, there are a rare few who suffer serious side effects. Now the federal government is offering compensation for anyone who becomes seriously ill after having their COVID shot.
It's been a long road to recovery for Matty John.
It's a really uncomfortable and quite a frightening experience.
He felt like he was having a heart attack 2 days after getting the Pfizer vaccine.
I just got this sharp pain that I've never experienced before in the centre of my chest.
Diagnosed with severe pericarditis, he was off work for 10 weeks.
You're constantly worrying, I suppose, that anxiety around, I suppose, we're talking about your heart.
Maddie's not alone. It's estimated 79,000 people have suffered adverse reactions to vaccine.
I'm sorry, I said deaths then, right? But 79,000 adverse events and deaths of that. This is insane, right? And again, they give it away in the clip too. The government has to pick up the tab for this because the vaccine manufacturers are indemnified. They cannot be sued for this. It's one of the only industries in the world. I mean, this is insane.
Correct. There was some analysis of the data done by James Fox Higgins, who does some excellent work. He's an excellent musician, broadcaster, podcaster, and he's contributed some amazing stuff to XYZ. He did some analysis of the data sort of about halfway through 2021, and the conclusion was that you are more likely to have an adverse reaction or die from the COVID vaccines. Sorry, how's my sound? Am I good?
Oh, no, you're good. Yeah, you're good.
Yep. You're more likely to have an adverse reaction or die from the COVID vaccine than you are to catch COVID or die from COVID if you are unvaccinated. And then the Vox Day actually did some analysis of that data as well, and he said, well, if you're pushing this on children in particular, it's absolutely morally reprehensible.
Yeah.
Also, what was really, really intriguing throughout 2021, we saw a number of public officials, whether they were politicians, health ministers, guys in charge of the health the health public service, having slips of the tongue when they were talking about those who were hospitalised, basically admitting that most of them were vaccinated. And every now and then, clips of them saying this would actually come out. And so then they would just put out a statement saying, oh, we just got it around the wrong way. Most of them are unvaccinated. If they said 80% were vaccinated, they meant, oh, 80% were unvaccinated. I just misspoke. but then I did a bit of research, and the same kind of misspeaking happened a couple of times in Great Britain as well. And so what was going on as well was that when you look at the definition of fully vaccinated, fully vaccinated in Australia became having two doses. And you're not counted as fully vaccinated until 2 weeks after those two doses. It was very intriguing because at first they were basically saying they were using the expression vaccinated or unvaccinated. And then they changed the language in their press conferences to having no jabs, one jab or two jab. They used the expression not fully vaccinated. So they kept using they kept changing up the language to make it look like most people who are hospitalized with COVID were unvaccinated. But when you look at the breakdown of it, it was actually quite possible that most of the people were either had one jab or had had their second jab 2 weeks ago. And then they've actually released data again recently, which tries to present the data from 2021 as most people were unvaccinated. But at least what they're admitting now is that most people who are hospitalized with COVID have had at least two jabs, and but now they're trying to use that to push the boosters as well.
So it's
an amazing it's amazing figures, like despite the fact that like the people who are hospitalized supposedly with COVID have all been, most of them have been jabbed, rather than going okay, maybe we should look at the efficacy and the safety of these vaccines. You just need more of them.
Exactly.
You're flipping the logic, completely flipping the logic.
Yeah, the product is not working, right? So we need, first of all, we need more of it. And then it's also the fault of the people who didn't take the product of why the product isn't working. Again, this is all about, I mean, the dehumanization of the unvaccinated, right? The two-tier society and stuff. And again, we have some, let's just sample a couple, right? If you want your, this is Dan Andrews, I think, here. You want your life back? Get vaccinated. Let's see if we have audio on this here. No, we do not. Let me see here if I can find that.
That's Captain Crazy Eyes.
Is he insane, this guy?
He's absolutely nuts. there's a great photo where his eyes are poking out of, like, just trying to get out of his eye sockets.
Here it is. Let me see.
But workers who aren't vaccinated won't be at work in a lockout. So if you want your business to stay open during an outbreak, make sure your workers are vaccinated. To help make this new policy work once you reach the next phase, we are working on upgrading the Territory check-in app so that it can be linked to your vaccination certificate. That will help venues ensure that only vaccinated people are entering their premises during a lockdown or lockout situation. And I'll make this point. Businesses and venues will have the right to refuse entry to unvaccinated people whether or not there is an outbreak. So, for example, if organisations like AFLNT decide that all players and spectators at all footy games in the future must be vaccinated, that is their right, and we will back them in to enforce their right. So I'll say it again and again. If you want your life to continue close to normal, get your jab.
There you go.
For vaccinated people, the check-in app will basically be your freedom pass. For people who make the choice to not get vaccinated, no.
Your freedom pass. They're telling us.
Your freedom pass. Yeah. I mean, never been in the implementation of a medical technology in this capacity, and the coercive measures and the forceful and, you know, making it as difficult as possible for people to live their lives. But again, you're saying this is not over. You need this to have a job. Any job? Is that government
still
policy?
Yes. Now they've basically removed most. They've removed a lot of the restrictions. I'll get back to that guy in a few moments because that's Peter Gunner. He's the Chief Minister of the Northern Territory. But to answer your this question,
this is not Dan Andrews.
There are more of them. in multiple states and territories across Australia. This is
they look
this
the
guy's
same.
Just
I'm
one
sorry,
example.
They look exactly the same. He's thin. He's a little thinner. I do recognize. Okay, but regardless, yeah. The point stands. This is what you know. This is the type
Absolutely.
Of rhetoric. You know, I'm playing this yeah. as an example. Various yeah. premiers of different states in Australia have said basically the same thing. Like, you got to get exactly. vaccinated. You're going to be let back into life. This is the method. Anyway, go on.
Yeah, I'll expand on him in a bit because that's really interesting. What happened in that state? For example, here in Victoria, they made a big deal of there are no more mask restrictions.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Sure
I'm
that's okay.
Go ahead. There we go, David. Sorry about that.
Yeah. Not a problem. So yeah, they were trumpeting. Oh, no more mask restrictions.
Yep.
Except. Workers in shopping centres and, you know, public-facing shops still need to wear masks. And you still need to wear a mask on public transport. And
Ridiculous.
In a cab, I think, as well, and various places. So there are still mask restrictions, except you can walk into a supermarket without one and you don't need to walk around with a mask on just, you know, in the open. Mind you, I still see people wearing masks while they're driving alone.
I've seen that too. It's crazy,
yeah,
right?
A lot of women.
Look at this. Here's Dan Andrews, right? And here's the
this
other guy.
This is Dan Andrews.
Am I crazy for thinking they kind of look the same?
You're not crazy. And we have genuinely encouraged the suspicion that a lot of these guys are body doubles.
Yeah, exactly. They just clone them in a lab or something.
Yeah, or men pretending to be women. If you look at Dr. Kerry Chant and the Prime Minister of New Zealand. There's something strange about all of these people. Just finishing the answer
yes.
to your question.
Yeah,
you can't get a job in this country without getting a vaccine.
Yeah.
That's the thing. And what's amazing is that businesses are now struggling to get workers. And people aren't going out to businesses as well because they realized during the lockdown that they actually kind of like staying at home more with their families and just going to the local area rather than having to battle through all the traffic. So the economy is really struggling. That's the main thing. It's like they've backed off all the things, but they've kept the thing that they want.
Yeah.
You must have a vaccine certificate. And to enforce that, you must have that digital identity. So they're getting all of the things that they want.
Yes, exactly. The digital ID, that's a huge portion of this. There's so many tie-ins here of some of the politicians too in Australia. New Zealand, of course, as you said, Jacinda Ardern, she's one of these young global leaders for the World Economic Forum. But you have people yeah. such as Scott Morrison, right? He's done a lot of talks at Davos and stuff like that. You had Gregory Hunt. He's the served for the Minister of Health since 2017. He was held the position of Director of Strategy, I believe. Yeah, that's right. At the World Economic Forum.
Yeah.
This guy, you have others. We can expand it into the Rockefeller Foundation, right? They have something called Resilient Cities Network. This is back in 2015 when Melbourne lined up to be part of this. And again, we, you know, for those who've monitored, you know, much of the material that's come out over the last 2 years, will remember that the Rockefeller Foundation had something they called Operation Lockstep, where they basically simulated these things and they, you know, they showed pandemic scenarios and stuff. And they've been effectively using certain cities and certain areas as kind of experimental, basically where they can inflict, their strategies to see, well, how does this work? What can we do here and so forth? And, you know, they say it's all these things of like, well, is it environmentally say, you know, better? And how does it grow without, you know, getting out of hand and things like that? But surely there's something to this with all these powerful NGOs coming in and inflicting this on Australia, effectively, from my perspective, using it as kind of a playground of sorts. You know, that's kind of how I view it. Like, they're using Australia as a way, as a method to test and to see, right? Because they advanced some things in Australia, then they did other things in, let's say, Germany, they did other things yes. in the US, and they move it around like that, and they see what, they test actively on the population and see what works and what they tolerate, and then they, you know, can implement it in another country or another region.
Absolutely, yeah. Basically, we've all been saying that. It's like, hey, we're a test case for the rest of the world.
Yeah.
And Melbourne in particular, for various reasons. On that resilient city, we did a piece on that, which was amazing. Yeah, all tied to the Rockefellers and basically the cabal.
Yeah.
The chief health officer here in Victoria as well, his wife is basically connected to the UN or the World Health Organization as well. Like there are all these funny connections, and he got his job just before the start of the pandemic. And regarding this Safe Cities Network, it's amazing. Basically, there's been information that's come out that Victoria Police have essentially a central command and control hub, which gives them information that crosses the entire city. And what was happening when these protests were springing up, because they would try to spring them up in various suburbs of the city as well. And they essentially had the resources to transport hundreds of police to any part of the city. There was a protest which happened just down the road from where I live. And even once the majority of it was still over, I still saw these buses just going through these like little windy streets around where I live, full of police, taking the police just to that place. So it was like military level command and control organization.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm basically sending masses of police to quell any kind of dissent that happened anywhere in the city. And so that's how that worked in practice.
Interesting. And I mean, again, just, you know, reflecting on what happened in Canada. And of course, there was some freedom convoys and similar things in Australia as well. And we'll talk about that later when we talk about Canberra and the technologies that they use, the sonic weapons, the LRADs. We'll talk about that. That's this crazy culmination of all of this that we've seen, right? And they used them in Canada too, by the way. But I was just amazed at how many police are, like, what are all these guys doing the rest of the time? Like, I've never seen so many. I mean, I get it. They ship them in from other parts or whatever, but still it's just like an army of like just cops everywhere. And it's like, where are they? We're paying for these guys for the rest of the, I haven't seen them in 4 or 5 years since the last, you know, problem happened with some protest or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, there was actually footage at one protest of the police training the police. They were literally just getting newbies in.
Yeah.
And you know, it's my first day, and they're quelling riots.
Yeah. Have fun, bash some brains in, guy.
Yeah. And the police were basically being told by the superiors, you do what you want and we'll back you.
Yeah.
So that's again what I'm talking about. They were getting no pushback.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was phenomenal. Like, Victoria has basically become a police state.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
are you happy for that?
How is the implementation of that? I mean, in terms of like, you know, because you talked about the vaccine passport and stuff like that now too. I remember we've played some clips from Australia. They're talking about digital IDs to get online, you know, all kinds of things. There's all these things coming in the wake of this, which seems to be kind of, you know, implemented regardless in a way. Is there any opposition to this, would you say, generally? Is there any pushback against this? Or are there any continued protests, or have most of it kind of simmered down now?
There are still protests going on in Melbourne, and I think in the major capital cities. They're not as big as they were at the end of 2021 and the start of 2022.
Yeah.
And that's a good question, just to push things along and sort of talk about what happened after the lifting of the lockdown here.
Yeah.
In Victoria. Basically, the protests just absolutely took off. Every week after the lifting of the protests just got bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. It got to the point where I think it was at the end of 2021 or the start of 2022. I actually can't completely remember, but it's worth sharing a couple of the photos that I sent just of the crowds in Melbourne. There were basically seas of people. And these were the biggest. Yeah, there we go. So that's looking down Bourke Street. That's one of the main cities in the central business district.
That's a lot of people.
That's an aerial shot. That's several blocks worth of hundreds of thousands of people marching through Melbourne. I went to one of the protests that I went to. I went along with several other people who are involved in groups and guys who I've done live streams and podcasts with, Maddie Rose and Mark Moncrief. Mark Moncrief got there earlier than I did, and he saw the start of the procession. That one's from Canberra. I'll get to that as
well. Okay, okay, yeah, we got it.
Yep. From the basically from the start of the procession to the end, it took 55 minutes for the crowd to go past. Wow. Guys in other states, Stephen Wells, I think, in Perth said that it took over an hour for the crowd to go past. So these are the biggest protests that we've ever seen. Again, the media kept referring to them as a fringe, as just several thousand or hundreds or whatever. And they kept talking up the counter protests, which were tiny. These protests were huge. And it wasn't just one protest. This happened week after week after week after week. It got to the point where it could have been 500,000 or even 1 million across the whole of Australia, protesting week after week, Saturday after Saturday. And so that was an expression that this isn't just some fringe movement. There's a huge groundswell of opposition to the vaccine mandates, because those were happening after the lockdowns were over and they were protesting against the vaccine mandates. So in answer to your question, yes, absolutely. Hundreds of thousands, over 1 million people regularly protesting against these throughout the capital cities, and not just once or twice, but week after week after week. There was a short break over Christmas, and then the protests continued at the start of 2022. And so then that finally builds to Canberra, because what people realise is, hey, we're protesting each weekend throughout the cities. We're just marching around the city, getting tired, but, you know, we keep coming back. Nothing's happening. The state governments aren't responding. So they finally decided to go to the centre of power in Australia, which is Canberra, which I always maintain is a city which shouldn't exist. they tried to find a place halfway between Sydney and Melbourne just to quell interstate rivalry and just build this.
I've actually looked at some of the architecture of Canberra. It's very interesting. You know, they talk about Washington, D.C., if you want to get conspiratorial, right, but all the patterns and stuff. And, I mean, it's for the lack of a better term, it's like a new world order city. I mean, that's what
absolutely.
It is. You know?
Yeah, like literally, if you look at the way that the giant Australian flag on the top of Parliament House New Parliament House in Canberra is built, it's the frame of a pyramid.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah. I remember seeing some footage of that. Yeah, Parliament House pyramid. It even comes up on Google searching right there.
There you go. It's actually a beautiful part of Australia. Like it's close to the tallest building in Australia.
Yeah.
Tallest mountain in Australia.
Tallest mountain, okay. Yep. Got it. Yep.
Yeah, it's a beautiful area. It's got NWO literally in its fingerprints.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Let's talk about what happened in Canberra then.
I first started just seeing a little bit of things on social media and Telegram saying that there was a convoy to Canberra. And then I saw a crowd basically right up at the entrance, right up at the doors of Parliament House. And you had police literally forming a line along the doors of Parliament House. And you had people protesting, waving flags, chanting, all that sort of stuff. The next day, the Prime Minister gave a speech at the National Press the National Press Club in Canberra, and the protesters went there and they mobbed his car as he drove out of there. And there were people swearing at him and trying to chase cars down the road. And it was amazing. And kind of like when the tradie protests kicked off, we were kind of like, whoa, it's finally happening. People are getting angry. They're twigging, hey, we've actually got to go to the center of power and actually take this to the people who make the decisions directly. Because Scott Morrison, our Prime Minister, had always sort of tried to deflect the blame for the lockdowns and all of the COVID tyranny onto the premiers. But people realized after a while, no, this guy's the Prime Minister. he's the guy that we've got to go to. And so then that weekend there was a massive protest in Canberra, and then the following weekend it was huge. Some people have said it was hundreds of thousands, some people have said it was over 1 million. Those crowds were absolutely massive, those photos that you showed. And they were the biggest protests that Canberra's ever seen as well. And so it's at that point that the government pulls out, you know, the big stops. They've used rubber bullets before. They've beaten protesters, but now they're actually using this guy.
Yep. LRAD, long-range acoustic device, a sonic weapon, a new type. They've actually been around for some time. I think first time I heard about them was probably 15 years ago or something like that, right? But basically, wow. Genesis, I think the American company is one of the main providers of it or manufacturers of it. And it was like a crowd dispersion technology, you know, kind of thing, right? These are very, very bizarre weapons because it had different effects on different people, right? I guess it's depending on even what frequency you can. I'm not sure how if they can fine tune that, but some people claim it's like it feels like they want to throw up. Some people feel like they're on fire, like they're burning and stuff, right? And we saw some footage after they've been using this. And again, did they initially just deny it or said these are crazy conspiracies? What are you guys talking about? Was that what the first reaction was after, despite the fact that people showed photos online and social media?
Pretty much, yes.
Yeah.
I saw that you showed the clip of Malcolm Roberts asking the.
Yeah, I have it here. Should we play it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's play it. Here it is.
Questions are coming from a constituent. In relation to the convoy to Canberra protest activity at Parliament House just last weekend, pictures of the day appear to show some types of devices at the front of Parliament House in between the entry to Parliament and Parliament lawns where the protest was in fact occurring. Can you confirm whether the AFP had long-range acoustic devices at Parliament House on Saturday?
That would be something that is our police methodology, which we would have to look at some sort of public interest immunity claim. Senator?
That's work, that face.
That's exactly, I know, it's crazy.
That's amazing.
I'd have to, if I could take that on notice, I'd have to get advice.
Okay, I'd be happy, I understand, I'd be happy for that. And also, if you could tell us what type they were, please.
Sure.
And can you confirm whether or not they were used at any point?
Sure.
There it is right there.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah, and look,
on that too.
Look at the guys behind. Like, they're wearing specialist equipment.
Of course. Yep, absolutely. Yeah. Let's play that again. Yeah, that's crazy.
They're quite clearly specialists.
Oh, yeah. And there's even these schematics of, like, what distance you can stand from and if you're standing right behind it or on the side and what protection you need, right? So it's not just, like, auditory. It's not just that this is, like, oh, this is, you know, hurts my ears or something. There's other, here's another clip. We can play this too. This is a lady talking about her experiences and what it felt like. Listen to this.
Quite a lot of us have been burnt here over the weekend, and I do have some burn too.
Yeah.
But the first day I had a hat and sunscreen on, and my lips just broke out, and these feel more like chemical burns.
Yep.
And these lips, some of the old, it's not affecting everyone the same. Obviously, all our bodies are different.
Yep.
So there were people in a first aid tent that were holding their ground because they had sick people there. And they've got the blue shirt police that were fairly friendly.
Yeah.
You know, under the circumstances. And then you've got these other black ones. Our country's in distress. The fucking show is not as important as our parliament being taken over by foreign corporate entities. And these people are protecting the show instead of us. So I don't know what happened to that woman. These evil men in black got her. She was on her knees peacefully. And they're just yelling and screaming at her. They've got the dog going. I don't know if the dog got her. But one woman, I could have taken her down on my own. Not fucking 10 guys. I don't know, you know, like 6 guys on this woman and a fucking dog threatening her as well. It's just too much for that. Our Australian people, and we're all cooked. We're literally fried. Did I think I'd ever want to talk on a
It's crazy. She's clearly in massive distress, that woman right there, like freaking out.
It's important to note that this isn't heat stroke.
No.
Every Australian knows how to prepare for hot days. Every Australian knows what we need to do when we're going to be out all day in the hot sun in the middle of summer.
Yeah.
We wear hats. We bring plenty of water. We use the toxic sunscreen, whatever. We know the difference between sunburn and heat stroke and something weird.
Yeah.
And it's not just that lady. There are plenty of videos of people saying that weird stuff has happened.
Yeah.
I know people who know people quite – basically, everybody's saying something weird happened in Canberra. Everybody felt sick. Everybody had symptoms which correspond with radiation poisoning. Going back to the clip of Malcolm Roberts, so he's from One Nation. That's one of the minor parties here in Australia. In the same week, either the next day or a couple of days after, Craig Kelly from the United Australia Party, he asked in Parliament, he actually stood up in Parliament and asked about that as well. He asked the Speaker of the House directly whether the LRADs were used. And the response to him was heckling and guffawing from the other MPs in Parliament. And the Speaker of the House sort of said, yeah, I'll get back to you on that. But the very in his very last sort of breath, he sort of he was like, I'll get back to you on that. Jeez. Like basically like he was laughing at him. But yeah, as we saw from that awkward smile, Canberra policing that clip is important because that's basically showing that this thing was mobile. People have questioned because they said that they were feeling sick at the camps.
Yeah.
They were taking this thing around and just directing it wherever the protesters were.
Yeah. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah. So, basically ACT policing, came out the next day and said, yes, we use them, but they're a public address system. You know how, like, this is the standard response from Globo Homo. Like, they start with a lie, then you call them out on that lie. So they just walk it back. And every time you call out their lie, they just walk it back.
Yeah, it's like the biolabs in Ukraine. It's like they deny it. Exactly. And then all of a sudden, it's just like, boom. Oh, okay, so you're admitting that you have it, and now you're afraid it's going to happen in the Russians' hand. Like, what are you?
Yeah.
Every time it's the same thing. And I'm glad that they get called out on it, and I'm glad that they kind of slowly at least get painted into a corner, right?
Yes. And this one that you're sharing here, this is important as well, because this is the ABC. Talking about the LRADs, the ABC is basically the retarded cousin of the BBC. They're publicly funded Marxist propaganda.
Yeah.
So this is them worried about the use of sound weapons on protesters back when the only people who used to do protests in Australia were fellow Marxists.
Yeah.
And they talked to a specialist who says that the military was using this, the US military would use it, to literally clear buildings of soldiers, and then they would have snipers to pick people off as they got out of the buildings. So Jeez. We're not talking about grandmothers with heat stroke here. We're talking about hardened soldiers who are hit with something that says that makes them feel like, I have to get out of where I am. I have to leave cover only to be hit by a sniper.
Yeah.
That's the type of weapon that these things are.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, they have things that make people throw up. You know, there's all kinds of weird things like this new exotic technology, which is really, you know, kind of indicative of the whole, really the new era that we're moving into. And I guess we could tie these things in a little bit because we were talking before started the live stream here, of kind of like where this is going, and like we have so many consequences now, not only of the lockdowns and then probably the vaccine, and who knows what 5-10 years from now where things are going to be with people's if their immune system is compromised and so forth, right? But all these other issues that it is being exacerbated, one thing after another that happens. We've talked about supply chain disruptions. We've talked about people, you know, leaving their job, quitting their job, or they're losing their job, their business go out of business. And then you have supply chain issues. You have shortages. Now with the Russia-Ukraine conflict, you have a food issue, right? They're one of the major grain exporters. You have energy, you know, gas and oil, which they want to do away with anyway, if we want to tie this into the Great Reset and all these kinds of things, right? And Australia is suffering under this as well as so many other Western nations are right now, where basically we have nothing to replace energy with. Even I was checking up the other day here of the fertilizer issue, even that alone, right, of like how much Russia apparently is producing. Canada's producing some of it, but if they ban all import exports coming in or out of Russia, like, we might be looking at a catastrophic scenario here within a year potentially, or maybe a year and a half, or maybe sooner. I'm not sure. Well, what do you feel generally about where this is going? And I guess I tied it into with the tech stuff, because, like, you know, Klaus Schwab, he's talking about the fourth industrial revolution. And it feels like the forces that we're up against, David, it's like, I think that they're thinking that they have this in the bag. They have now technologies at their disposal in ways where they can control mass populations in a way that they've never been able to do before, right? What do you feel about this? What's your take?
Absolutely. Well, first and foremost, regarding Canberra, although the protests here in Melbourne and some capital cities are still going on, everybody's left Canberra. I think people just don't want to go back. They don't want to feel the way that they were meant to feel again, for starters.
Yeah.
Regarding these engineered shortages that we're seeing, and they are absolutely engineered shortages, like when you shut down the entire world economy and the supply chains over a manufactured pandemic, you're going to get supply chain issues.
Yes.
At the start of this, back in early 2020, Scott Morrison assured everybody, as people were stripping out supermarkets and leaving shelves bare, that we had enough food to feed three Australians.
Oh, good.
Yeah, the thing is that...
Him and two more, just, then.
Beg your pardon?
Him and two more.
Yeah, he kind of looks like it. They all kind of look like it. Too many pork pies. So, that's slowly been whittled away. The way that we source our food here in Australia, like we produce plenty of it, the farming industry uses imported labor. They use students and labor from the Pacific Islands to pick the fruit. And they always say, oh, no, there are just some jobs Aussies won't do. But the truth is, it's just they're not prepared to pay a fair wage, and they don't seem to want to pay Aussie teenagers to do it, or maybe parents aren't motivated to get their teenagers out and do it as well. But so when we shut the borders and we weren't bringing in imported labor, they were worried that all of this food was going to rot in the fields. And so, you know, I think there's been some wastage. And then we've currently got the floods up in Queensland and northern New South Wales, which are disrupting supplies again. There have also been various supply issues because they've said that a lot of the people in the supply chain are either at home isolating or basically need to isolate due to COVID restrictions and all that sort of stuff. So, again, all these engineered crises. And then when we look at fuel, the fuel situation in Australia, we do produce oil and quite a lot of gas, and we've got plenty of coal, but there's been strong movements for a couple of decades to basically stop us using all the coal, which is right under our feet. And don't even talk about nuclear power, and I'm allowed to talk about that. But I can't remember if it's 2 weeks or a month, but we've got either 2 weeks or a month's supply of oil. So just say there's a disruption to the global supply chain of oil. Just say our sea lanes are cut. And Australia's cut off from the rest of the world because, I don't know, we've picked a fight with a nuclear-armed power which has a really, really powerful navy. Australia's going to grind to a halt. Australia is a big country, and the farms are a long, long way away, and it takes a lot of petrol to move all the food to where you need to go. And Australians aren't really growing food and have chickens in the backyard like we used to back during World War II when we were able to get a lot of food ourselves.
So it's
an engineered crisis to basically get people to the point where they'll starve. And it wouldn't surprise me if in the years coming people get very hungry. There will be some kind of famine. But I think the government is always going to want to have its own foot on the lever. I think what freaked the Canadian government out, for example, over the trucker convoy, was that that was the people taking the supply chains into their own hands, so that they couldn't control it. So I think governments like to be able to squeeze us a little, and then they see when the pressure's building up just a little bit too much, and
they ease off.
And they ease off just so that. A coordinated mass movement doesn't arise against them.
Yeah,
I know. So what's freaked them out about Canada is that that's people going, no, we're going to choke you.
Yeah.
So I think what governments across the world are wanting to do is to just steadily choke us, just to the point where we just keep going back to the government and saying, you help us out. And, you know, they'll give us the option of, okay, we'll give you all this stuff, but we're going to take away your freedom and then we're going to take away your things and we'll supply it for you.
Yeah, exactly. It feels like it's this, it's basically like that UBI system, right? Universal basic income. And again,
you'll own nothing and you'll be happy.
That's right. And look at how that will tie you into like that as a behavior modification tool, essentially, where basically like, If you don't comply, if you don't do what you're told, you're cut off. That's it, right? So that the idea of being independent and stuff, that they want that out the window. And part of that, I mean, again, we've talked about Agenda 2030, sustainable development goals and all that stuff. Much of that has been also about driving people off of the countryside into mega hub, you know, mega cities. You're supposed to put, you know, if your life sucks, you're supposed to put on the VR headset and be in the metaverse and sitting in a pod and, you know, eating bug juice or something. that's where they want us. It might sound kind of trite and, you know, kind of cringe almost, but it's like, these are the things that they're talking about, right? They'll make life so miserable, and impossible to navigate with all these like technical hurdles, essentially, that you have to come crawling and begging to them to survive. And at that point, they have you in the bag. It's a done deal. It's over at that point, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's their plan. We know their game plan. It ties in with the protests that we've seen throughout 2021 and 2022, not just in Australia but across the West.
Yeah.
And it's also why I mentioned right at the start, I mentioned the Reclaim Australia rallies, which went on. That was something that was going on right when I started XYZ. And that was going on when the European migrant crisis was in full swing. And a lot of Aussies here in Australia, a lot of Aussies were getting red-pilled on Islam. We were finding out, oh, this is what the Quran actually says. And these people who they say are extremists, they're just following the Quran. And so that was one of the things that red-pilled me on race, because I realized, oh, look at the way that Islam conquered these territories, and then steadily over the course of centuries, those places became, many of them became 100% Muslim.
Yeah.
And so look at what is now Turkey. It used to be Asia Minor. It used to be Europe. It used to be Greece.
That's right.
But now it's Turkey. A completely foreign population has come in and taken the place over. That red-pilled me to the idea that this is the big picture. We've got actual deliberate population replacement, which has been carried out by our governments. And regardless of which side of the fake political spectrum they're on, all governments, I love that map. Yeah, that map, that's everybody's seen that map now.
Yeah,
Yes, so all governments are in favor of this population replacement.
They are.
For various reasons, whether it's ideological, economic, just because they're evil. And so what was happening in Australia in 2015, basically a patriotic movement sparked up called Reclaim Australia, which was against Islamization, against Muslim immigration. I'm worried about terrorism. And what was happening was a lot of those people were getting red pill just like I was. And so what happened was that Marxist terrorists, Antifa, were literally allowed to go out and bash people. They bashed old ladies. And you might think that's terrible optics, but it's great optics because it means that mums and dads don't want to take the kids along for the next protest.
Yeah, exactly.
And so from there you had only the guys who were prepared to stand up to Antifa, and you basically had two groups of political activists being separated by the police, and the police are stopping Antifa are always trying to get to the right-wing guys. And the media says, oh, the protests were violent, and they blame it on the right-wing guys. And so that's how that was able to be dissipated. What was going on with the protests last year and at the start of this year in Australia, that was the first real chance of a genuine nationalist movement in Australia arising again since 2015. Would you be able to show the photos of the Melbourne protests and the Canberra protests again?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Let me pull those up here.
Thank you. Yeah, beautiful. So if you look at the faces in the crowd, 99% of them are white. It's something that we noticed straight away.
Yeah.
And we wrote articles about it. Like Adam Piggott wrote a brilliant piece basically pointing out that the immigrants who've come here, they don't really care how bad it gets here because it's always going to be better than the place that they came from.
Right.
So they're not going to rock the boat. It's the Aussies who have seen our freedoms, even pre-COVID, just being taken away steadily from us, and seeing the culture of the place just go crazy and woke, who are standing up and saying, no, we're not going to take any more of this. What's intriguing, and I deliberately sent these photos through, see the girl there with an Aboriginal flag, mm-hmm. and you see those flags in the other protests as well.
Yep.
And it was great to see Aussie flags, the red ensign being waved, the Eureka flag. Those were really important Australian flags. But people were waving the Aboriginal flags and also flags of their various countries, whether they're European countries or other countries. What you had was, to borrow a Marxist term, white people all congregating, but who still lacked a race consciousness.
Yeah.
But the longer that this went on, the more chance there was of a genuine race consciousness coming together. Mm-hmm. And so when you want to look at why these LREDs were used, we can go, yeah, they were worried about security. They wanted to do parliament because, you know, the protests were designed to coincide with the restarting of parliament. But that's the main issue. They're like, we don't want this gravy train to stop. We can't let our system of mass immigration, population replacement, pumping the country full of people so that we can pretend that we have an economy that's growing, so that we can then con more immigrants to come to Australia and keep replacing the country. It's basically a cycle. It's a Ponzi scheme. And they can't allow that to stop. And what will stop that is Australians coming together, realizing that we are a people who deserve to live. We're a people who have an identity that goes back to the British founding of Australia. And it's only a matter of time before everybody kind of looks around and going, well, why are we waving all of these other flags?
Right. Yeah.
We're Aussies.
Yeah.
Why aren't all these immigrants who were told are enriching us, why aren't they coming
here
along to help us out?
Exactly, backing us up.
And,
yeah. And then there's a few, and of course they wheel them out in the front and stuff, and then they largely these are conservative movements, but then they also have this, well, yeah, but it's not about race, but then they push the few minorities that they have to the very forefront to prove to the leftists and the globalists that hate them that they're not the Nazis that they claim that they, you know what I mean? It's this, look, I get it, that they're trying to optically kind of find their way out of this, but as you say, and this is one thing you're alluding to as well, at the bottom line, these are primarily European Australians, right? The UK or other European countries too, the founding stock of Australia, that built Australia. They're the ones out there. It's them who are losing their country, as you said. Many other people that come from far worse conditions, and they're like, well, just keep your head down for now, just obey, you know, kind of thing. And that's another thing. That's why so many of these globalists and the elites up at the top, they don't want these pesky Europeans who are putting demands on certain things. They want to go back to some period when they had a better life, right? They want people to keep their head down, kind of generally obey. And if you know, that's just part of the reality, that if you came from a shitty country, as you said, it's always going to be better. You know, even if it's worse for us, it's maybe better for them still. And so they're like fine with it. They don't really care about that. So no look, the replacement agenda, that's still like, you know, number one on that list, as far as I'm concerned for them, you know.
Absolutely, yeah. It's like the Ukraine war is a distraction from the distraction from the distraction. You know?
Yeah.
That's being very facetious because, you know.
And then yet you have two European nations also now fighting, and the expectation that all these other, look at how, you know, Zelensky is pushing to get all the NATO countries to go and line up their guys to fight Russia now. You know what I mean? Is this really what we need right now? We need more Europeans going to a world war with each other? Is that the best thing? Like, it's bad enough with the vaccine. It's bad enough with the lockdowns. It's bad enough with the supply chain, the oil and gas, the sustainable development, all these things. And then it's like, yes, let's do a world war with nukes right now. That should take care of this issue once and for all, you know.
Well, it's insane. It was predictable as well.
It was, yeah. Yeah, in a way.
Yeah. There was a video that I watched with a guy who claims that he was a former military contractor over in the US, surname was Decker. And he was basically talking about how they war gamed everything. And what he's predicted has been happening. Like he was talking about how they would they war gamed what happens if Biden wins the election. And they said at some point they will start a war to basically get the patriotic Americans on their side for a little while, or at least try to. And we know that Hillary Clinton was like trying to start a war with Russia, and that's why a lot of people were very happy that Donald Trump won in 2016, because it's like, hey, okay, we've averted disaster. So they've been pushing for this war for a long time. And again, it's part of this plan basically to just put the squeeze on us. Starve us out, bring in this digital ID.
Yes, absolutely. I was trying to find, I remember I was reading that, I forget if it was Blacklisted News that had one of this about the conflict, but yeah, someone was talking about that too, that someone had war. I mean, they do these, you know, they have supercomputers, they have like real life, this sounds crazy if you're not, you know, aware of these things, but they basically have the world simulated inside of these supercomputers, and they run different scenarios off of each other to try to predict essentially what's going to happen next. What happens if we do that? What happens if we do that? You know, game theory, the game plan, everything, right? Anyway, I remember seeing that too. And I forget if it was this source or whatever, but yeah, we're in crazy kooky times here, David. And I mean, anything is possible, and I'm really worried about the future. Look, I don't want the electrical grid to go down. I don't want some cyber attack to happen. I don't want the food supply, obviously, the food supply to be, you know, dwindling.
I like
and stuff.
The indoor plumbing.
I like that too. I like civilization. It's not a bad thing. Look, we've gotten so comfortable. We've gotten, I'm torn because part of me is like, you know, also I'm feeling like, well, let's rip off this Band-Aid then. You know what I mean? We've been so comfortable for such a long time, and you know, we don't really get out there and try to, you know, restore some kind of normalcy, or like toppling these people at the very top. They're doing this to us, right? And so maybe not conflict, maybe, but maybe like being pushed out of your comfort zone is ultimately a good thing. I just fear, I mean, I'm not sure if you've seen about like the doomsday bunkers and stuff. And apparently a lot of globalists are buying like properties in New Zealand and stuff. And they have their, you know, like there's various places where they're like, they will light the powder keg, go and run and hide for 6 months to a year, maybe a year and a half in some comfy doomsday bunker for millionaires. And then they, you know, surface later and just hope like, oh, how many people died? How many billions are gone? You know, they want that thing. You know, go ahead.
The awkward moment when even Dr. Strangelove is pre-programmed.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah, sorry. I mean, sorry, you're saying, yeah.
No, it's just, I mean, it's just, it's, I just, I'm very aware of the fact that they might just try to just cause as much problems as possible and then basically just run and hide and hopefully that this is over, right? I think, I mean, I'm not sure if the Georgia Guidestones are correct or whatever according to their philosophy, but on some level, I mean, these elites, they've been talking for a long time about the fact that the world is overpopulated, and these are, of course, the worst people that are fit to, that should decide of who gets to stay and who should go, right? But I truly think we live in a time that they want to, they want to depopulate, and they want billions gone. That's what I think the goal is here, to be honest.
Yes, I agree with you. I think the only question is whether they want to do it quickly or whether they want to do it slowly.
Yeah.
Because both are possible. They could be going for the giant conflagular. They could be going for Ragnarok.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. Better word. Which is why they've got those bunkers for just in case.
Yeah.
It's just as possible that they will just continue the slight squeeze. It's something that I've had to learn, particularly over the last 2 years, because the way I see it, like if things get better, fantastic. We'll fight the battle on all fronts, political, spiritual, physical, every way. If things get worse, it's also good because, you know, it just means more people get angry. We can reach more people. I've learned to stop hoping for a great chaotic event, which just overturns everything, which means that the government control is weakened because it doesn't have access to the resources, and we can finally just start going, you know?
Yeah.
But it's just as likely that every year the globalists will find just a way just to keep the squeeze going, and everything will just get a little bit faker, a little bit browner, a little bit gayer every single year. Yeah.
Shit, that's the worst.
That's actually the worst thing that could happen.
Yeah, it's like the Highlander scene. It's, you know, it's better to I forget what it said, not blow up, but like to go out in a bang than to fade away, right? It's like that's, you know, because it's like just a, you know, that's it, and nothing more. Is that it? Nothing happened? No resistance, no big pushback or anything like that. We just slowly were replaced. But, you know, and I want to let you finish your thought there. But then at the same time, I feel, to use the boiling of the frog analogy, that, like, I mean, over the last 2 years, they've thrown us into boiling water. I mean, and they're moving so fast that it's like, I think that's like waking people up. It's radicalizing people. They're questioning, you know, from the vaccine now to this push. And again, as you said, if something really starts happening with the food supply, I mean, then you're meddling with forces, which is like anything could happen at that point. That's what I'm thinking, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's why I was saying I reckon they were freaking out about the truckers. Because if ordinary people put that squeeze on, that's going to radicalize too many people too quickly for them.
Yeah.
I think just like COVID, like with the squeeze on food supply, they want to be able to squeeze us just a little bit and then take it away after a couple of years before organized resistance starts. I think that they believe that they can get away with their system of control. The problem with communist economics, as we all know, is that even if you get 1,000 of the most intelligent economists in the one point to plan the entire economy, that's not going to be anywhere near as efficient a system as millions of people all making their own decisions all across the world independently, all across the country independently. Like, that's going to be a far better economic system. They think that now that if they can control how people's money is spent, like if they can monitor everybody's money because it's all digital,
yep,
and then they can control it, and they have powerful enough supercomputers to analyze what's going on so that they can direct enough resources to the right places, that they can stop things from getting out of hand. I think they think that they can basically have a communist system, but they have the tech that will actually let them keep it running. It doesn't have to be perfect. People can still starve, but they'll be able to keep it going. So I think that's basically their plan.
Yes, I remember, I think his name is Karsten. He's the head of the, is it the Bank of International Settlements? I remember we were playing a clip with him. I'm looking for it right now. I can't seem to find it, but he's a Spanish guy, a large guy. He's like, you know, super fat or whatever, but he's like perfect. Bank head.
I just saw that. Do you know what I'm saying? Yeah.
We played it a couple of months ago, I remember, but he talked about that too. The digital currency, right? The central bank digital currency. That's where they want this to go, because as he admitted in that clip, he's saying that you would not only be able to, like, for the first time ever, actively monitoring every unit of the currency that's spent, right? So you can see, okay, that went over here, they went here, that they can track it in a different way. They can also just approve or disprove your purchases, for one, depending on who you are, but also maybe there's just a product. Again, think of this from the point of view of like the climate change thing, or like zero carbon. We got to go to zero emissions and all that stuff. Like, if you used up your carbon credits, or you've bought too much meat or whatever, well, guess what? When you try to swipe the card, it'll be denied, because they say, that's it. We got your number and it's too high, and sorry, you have to go for the soy patties next here, you know, or something.
Absolutely.
That's what they want, you know, full control.
Yeah, we already essentially have a social credit system.
We do.
In place. Yeah. It's just informal. And it's actually worse than the Chinese system, because in the... they have a system where there's a clear set, increase your credit score. If you do things which are pro-family and pro-government, you increase your credit score. If you don't...
Got you breaking up a little bit there, David. Can you hear us?
Water,
can you hear me okay?
Good family values.
There we go. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can hear you just fine. Sorry, was that cutting out?
Yeah, you're getting a little bit of a bad connection for some reason at the moment there. But no, you're saying you got to obey, basically. What we want you to do, you know, whether it's, as you said, fewer kids, don't buy a car. I mean, again, this is so crazy. Yeah. Many of these things that they're doing away with now. Anyway, they're talking about stopping gas petrol driven cars by like 2030 or something like that now. You know, it's like, what are you going to replace this with? There's no option. You got to produce electricity somehow.
Robot,
right? They're decommissioning nuclear power plants, and then all they can talk about is like solar panels and wind power. But it's like, do you know how much petrochemicals it takes to just produce those things? And when the increased costs now because of oil and gas and because of the sanctions, there's no viable options, which is just, again, the end result is absolute zero, grind civilization to a halt, and you'll have people freezing to death or starving to death at the end of this if they get their way, if they pull this off.
It's like we're kind of seeing the prologue to the Matrix. We're sort of seeing how they make it. You know, we've got people plugged into social media already. Like it's like an addiction. Like the internet is an addiction for many people, and they're destroying our sources of electricity. So you ask how they're going to make electricity. It's entirely possible, and don't discount it. Again, like all of this stuff we know is that there's a lot of pre-programming going on. The point I was making about the social credit score, in the West, the rules change from month to month. And you basically have mobs basically going around canceling people for something that they said 6 months ago or a couple of years ago. And as we've seen in Canada now, like they're cancelling people's bank accounts, stealing their assets, because they dissent from the narrative. We're seeing that social credit system come into just that whole infrastructure come into place. It's like they're laying the groundwork before they go full pelt on it.
I know.
Yeah, he's bulky. Look how fat that guy is.
I know, it's a crazy. He's like one of those. He's like it is like a personified. If I could put any. Choose a picture of someone who's like a world bank leader. He would look like this. Just put that Monopoly hat on him or something and a cane. You're good to go.
And a pig nose. Or a longer nose.
Yeah, he's a world bank pig, this guy. Let's be honest.
There's a reason that we make fun of these guys as well. We make fat jokes about guys like this and about the chief, police commissioner here in Victoria, eating lots of donuts because he looks like it. He even speaks like he's fat. We make fun of Kerry Chant. Like there's a amazing photo where like she's just got this mo and like her glasses are wonky and she literally looks like she's in drag. You see photos of, Justin Trudeau and the way he sits. He literally sits like a girl. Jacinta Ardern, there's a picture of her that looks like she has a, you know what?
yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All of these guys, look at this guy. This guy, he's reading from notes. The footage of Captain Crazy Eyes, the Chief Minister of the Northern Territory, even as crazy as he sounded, he was reading from notes. Kerry Chant, she's reading from notes.
Beautiful.
These people are not people like you and I. These people are defective in some kind of way, and they they clearly have people over them giving them notes saying, okay, you read this out and you make it sound convincing. There's a reason like we have the meme of post physique. The strong, independent white guy who can look after himself and source his own food. That's the last thing that these globalists want.
Yeah.
They want people like Dr. There it is. People have actually requested that we never show that photo again.
Sorry, guys, if you're watching. I couldn't help myself. Yeah. We've got to show the newcomers in case they're not familiar with this. It's wonderful.
And if you really want to get into it, it's like they're puppets, and some of these people, it's like they have demons inside. And so if you push them enough, you get to see that demon show its face as well.
Yeah, it's true. Exactly. And just the open, you know, like obvious, like their agenda, right? There's this classic of the New World Order she was talking about, right? Let me see if I have that clip there. Let me see if we have audio on that. Check this out.
We will be looking at what contact tracing looks like in the new world order. Yes, it will be pubs and clubs and other things if we have a positive case there.
All right. Oh, okay. Well, I thought it was a conspiracy theory, but all right. There you go. They just can't help themselves. They got to just shove it in our faces constantly.
I've coined the term a Freudian admission.
There you go. Exactly. Yep. I know. It's not just a slip. It's like they're pushing it intentionally to give you the message. Maybe they think you're supposed to be afraid of it or something like that. Maybe, you know, they feel intimidated by it. And I mean, it's not without reason, of course. But I mean, again, just back to that point, either we make it or we break it. That's just how the cookie will crumble here, I think. And it looks to me that hopefully we have enough people that are aware and they have capabilities. They're capable. They can do things. They can think outside the box. They have knowledge about how to do certain things. What I'm getting at is I think we're going to see the rise of a parallel society, David, because many people are also now being forced out of that. It's just basically a question of, like, how fast will they build the robots that's going to police everybody?
Yes, yes.
I mean, it might sound silly, but that's kind of what it's like at this point. Maybe it's not just robots, it's other technologies and stuff like that too. But, you know, overall, it's like...
robots. You've seen the Terminator?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the fourth industrial revolution, this is what they want. Why they want global coverage of 5G. They want to have, like, all these autonomous things everywhere. They want to have Internet of Things. I mean, ubiquitous, like, surveillance and all these crazy things. And this could go either way, to be honest, at this point. I think, ultimately, I don't think that they will succeed. Ultimately, I think a system like that will fail. But that doesn't mean that we might have decades or maybe even longer of complete subjugation to a system like that before it really, you know, falls apart.
Well, yeah, after the Bronze Age collapse, it was several centuries before things really kicked into gear again.
Yep.
After Rome collapsed, same thing. If you look at the work of Glubb, I can't remember if he was early 20th century or late 19th century, but he analyzed at least a dozen different civilizations, and he came to the conclusion that human civilization has a average lifespan of about 250 years.
Each
civilization goes through the same process. You probably know all of this and have talked about it. You know, there's initial expansion because the people of that civilization have amazing energy, a unity, ethnic unity, a religious, they all worship the same God. And then they expand. Then there's a system, there's a period of basically of degeneracy and an eventual collapse.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That's simply a reflection of human nature, like the cycle of strong men.
That's a cycle of nature. I don't think we can defeat it, to be honest. We just have to learn how to ride the tiger or ride with it, go with it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And so, that's a whole nother.
I've been looking into this recently
that's
too.
3 hours. Yeah.
The parallels, David. That's an interesting thing here, right? Because you had this interdependency of all these ancient civilizations at that time as well. And I mean, they don't know what exactly did it, but what they know is that there is a domino effect. What was that?
The ancient Israelites. Just read
the Hyksos, right? The Sea Peoples.
They blamed it on the mysterious sea peoples. They don't want anybody to look at Exodus, Leviticus, and Numbers. It's
right.
It's all that.
Yep.
Yeah. I'll leave that for. I'll just leave that there. You guys can take it where you want.
It's just I'm just showing it too. But you brought it up, but I'm showing it because of the parallels. I'm talking about the interdependency of these civilizations, and eventually it was just like we don't know what did it, but it was like crop failure, it was supply chain issues, it was invasions, it was migrations, like all the boom, 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 and eventually like a very advanced for that time, a very advanced civilization again, which had, you know, different, you know, interconnected parts, and it was, you know, they were trading with them, they were doing this. The parallels are striking in terms of it's much more advanced today. I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying we are right at the cusp of something like this, and I think we're living through that moment right now, David. We're watching it in real time. It's kind of slow motion because it's big. It's a big apparatus. It doesn't just – same thing with Rome. It didn't collapse overnight. It takes some time for these big cogs and the big wheels to grind to a halt, but eventually I think that will happen, to be honest.
Absolutely. So to tie this with Glubb, I don't have any illusion about restoring a civilization that's going to last forever, because I think this cycle will continue as long as as we're here, it's simply it's in human nature, and I think it'll continue until Jesus comes back. And whenever that is, I don't necessarily think it's end times. It could be, but it doesn't have to be. Like, this cycle just could continue. The thing is, that what's going on at the moment is that, we have access to all this information where we're able to see all these cycles and we can see what's coming. And so people are making preparations. As you say, we're, creating this parallel society. The globalists who are running the show at the moment, they have access to all this information as well. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to wipe us out so that we can't recreate something afterwards. And yeah. So I think that's what makes what's going on right now pivotal. And it's frustrating too. Like, we don't get to, go in some glorious battle to save our people. It might simply mean that, you know, we have to learn to grow food and, grow connections with people who, you know, might be slightly annoying, but they understand the same thing as well, you know?
Yeah, right. No, it might be much more, down to earth, I guess, for the lack of a better term than that. And, I mean, again, we don't know yet. It's too early to tell, but I mean, I think some of these big cities are going to just turn into zombie horde hellholes within, I mean, just a couple of days, essentially. And you'd probably see marauding, gangs and, you know, groups, tribes will form around these things, and they'll potentially go into, you know, other areas. They'll try to seek food and fuel and all these kinds of things. I guess it's, you know, Australia was ahead of the curve on that one with the Mad Max, right, scenario of sorts.
Again, pre-programming. Yeah.
I mean, again, I hope it doesn't get that bad, but I'm readying myself mentally for, like, anything is possible here. And I know that, and I know many people listening as well, they're like, they feel this. They feel something is ramping up. What do we need to do to prepare and stuff? Right now, I'm looking into, you know, how do we sustain and maintain some kind of food production system, and, you know, what do you need and stuff? And this is it's not something you just do overnight. You know what I mean? It takes time, and you need to know people. You need to have a lot of people around you that you know, that you can rely on, and you know that you'll help each other out, because that's what it's going to take at the end of the day. I think it's cooperation where we're looking at. You know.
Absolutely. And just having those connections to your family. Again, one of the insidious things about the vaccines is that, like, so many people in our families have taken the vaccines, and so we don't know if they're going to live or be able to reproduce. But yeah, we've got to build these alternative networks. We've got to start with ourselves. Like, I've lost 12 kilos in the last 5 years, and I've been able to keep that off, and I'm improving my own fitness just because I'm like, I may need to. I may need to be fit.
Yeah.
And a lot of guys are realizing that too.
Yeah.
Building these networks, starting with ourselves, getting ourselves right with God, with our people, and just going, okay, we can't rely on the government because we know what the government's trying to do to us.
Yeah, that's right. And I still think there's time in this, from the point of view that, like, there's still time to wake people up. I think it's late. It's late in the game, but there's still the more and the harder they push, and the quicker, you know, things begin to deteriorate around people, they will begin to look for answers, and they'll begin to, like, okay, what the hell is going on here? We got to sort something out. So I'm also very encouraged over the fact that there's so many variables. There are things that can happen or that show up even late in the game that will change the trajectory, that will change the game, that will change things. And look, at times of great crisis and great need, that's when most humans, most men step up to the plate. And in some cases, that's what we need to take things to the next level. So it's a time of great danger, but also a time of great opportunity. And the hard thing I feel is, like, this, you have to have, first of all, willpower. You know, you got to want to survive. You got to want to do this. You know what I mean? And the second thing is you got to kind of learn to enjoy seeing things transform around you and see it as an opportunity as opposed to just like a doomsday, you know, black hole and abyss that no one's going to escape from. So a lot of it is, look, I'm not saying it's not hard physically, but a lot of it is about the mental battle as well. That's what I see.
Yeah. And being in it for the long game as well. You've got to learn to pace yourself. Like I said, like you can't rely on everything falling apart tomorrow so that you can finally do all those things that you've been preparing for.
Yeah.
You have to be prepared for that slow siege. But at the same time, Yeah, we've been too comfortable. It's something I recognised several years ago, and I've taken steps to deliberately put myself in uncomfortable situations, and I don't like it, but you grow through it. You become more resilient, and you make yourself ready for whatever's coming, whether it's the slow siege, whether it's the collapse.
Absolutely. Well, David, this has been a great discussion. Very fascinating. I like the way things, how we were talking about here at the end as well, the big picture of stuff. But again, I think the great big takeaway here as well, we cannot forget this. I hope that we're going to see much more. Again, depends on how bad things get and what the next news story is, what happens with the Russia-Ukraine conflict. But the point is, I know for a fact that there's a lot of people that are working actively. In front of the cameras and behind the cameras, so to speak, of like holding people accountable and responsible for what they're done. And I think the vaccine thing is might be one of the first dominoes that fall, and that would do a lot, I think, to help to wake people up as well. I know that there's a lot of people that have taken the vaccine and they've gotten all kinds of strange side effects and adverse events and stuff, and they're pissed off. Like, they want to have someone who's responsible, because they were told. I mean, we showed the article the other day. It was like 95. Oh no, this is not the one. But CNN piece of like 95% efficacy. It's safe and effective and stuff. And now it's like, look at it now, how that deteriorated and how quick that went too. So someone's going to need to be held accountable. And then the next level to that is, what about the lockdowns? What about the restrictions? What about all the social credit score, the vaccine passport? So all those things. And we got to get these people out of positions of power that did this to us and ensure that it never happens again. That's what I'm seeing. What are you seeing as a way of concluding our discussion here today, David?
Yeah, absolutely. We can't just go back to 2019.
No, because that was bad. That was bad enough, right?
Yeah. That 2019 Globo Homo was full on.
Yes.
These people need to pay the price for what they've done to us. If they just let us all go back to work, even if they repeal the vaccine mandates and let us all go back to work, the same people are still in power. They've still got the money and they've still got their plans. And they might take one step forward, but then they're going to take another two. Sorry, they might take one step back, but then they're going to take another two steps forward. That's why it's important just to keep developing these networks that we've built, like during that great period of 2016, 2017, when we had access to millions of people because the algorithms weren't squashing everything. And then these last couple of years when, again, there's been a major uprising of millions of people across the West, and we've been able to make all these connections. Like when the media runs like scare stories about how the far right is taking over the protest movement, well, yes, that's what we want to do. We're making connections.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because we know what you're planning. You're planning to genocide us all.
That's right.
So it's just about keeping on working, doing a lot of the boring stuff, working on ourselves, and not stopping. Just don't stop. Whatever you do, don't stop.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Try to keep your morale high. Try to think of good things. Have your mental space needs to be in a good place. Know that this is a time of great opportunity. There's a lot of things are going to change. It's going to be better. It's going to get better. You know what I mean? Short term, yes, it might get really bad and rough, right? But no, long term, we need adults to come into the picture and restore some kind of normalcy, some level of normalcy. That's what I'm saying here. All right, David, tell us about the website. In your lower third, I have a couple of things linked up there, of course. Your Telegram, we have your Twitter account, we have your Gab account. Tell us how people can find your works and follow you guys and so forth.
I always say to people just to avoid social media altogether and just come straight to the site, www.xyz.net.au. Some days we put up four or five articles. We've got a range of different contributors, guys who are from various groups, guys who have their own blogs, guys who just send me stuff, which I always really, really appreciate. I've actually had a week off, so you won't see many stuff from me this week. So all those guys always appreciate the stuff that you put through. But we're always trying to sort of follow the news, the COVID stuff, international stuff, and basically the scene here in Australia. We're also on Telegram, and I think you'll find us with the handles It's Your XYZ on Gab and Twitter as well. We've also got a Patreon, which we always appreciate contributions. We're trying to build up a helicopter fleet.
Sure. Tell us what the URL is to your Patreon so people know.
Basically, there's a link on our main site. So if you go on the main webpage, you'll find the link. I think we still say something about freedom of speech, but that's a whole other issue. That's so 2017.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I think we still have to prepare. We can't not be pro free speech because that would tell our enemies that they're right in censoring us, and they're not, right? So we got to push back. But then at the end of the day, there's some things that needs to be banned. That's just how it goes. But, you know. All right. Anyway, David, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate your time today. Fantastic having you on. Keep us posted in terms of what's going on down there, and I'd love to have you back in the future again, and we could talk more about how things are progressing. And good luck down there as well. I appreciate your time today.
Thank you very much. Absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Awesome. You bet. Thank you so much. All right, guys. That's it for us today. Thank you to David again. The website is xyz.net.au. And, of course, tomorrow we'll be back with Flashback Friday as well. Mark Collett will be guest hosting together with us. We're slated to start at the normal time. So that's 6 p.m. Eastern, midnight Central European time. Thank you so much. Appreciate your time today. Have a great one. Sign up if you want to support us over at subscribestar.com/redice. Get a membership, redicemembers.com. We appreciate your support. We'll see you tomorrow. Take care.
Do you love Red Ice? Want more? Get access to exclusive material by signing up for a Red Ice membership. You'll be able to watch Weekend Warrior, our flagship show, the second hour of interviews, and other special feature videos only for subscribers. Were you a member and we lost you along the way? Renew! We love and appreciate you guys and gals and cannot do this without you. Help us be a sane voice, a lighthouse in the sea of insanity. As times get tougher, as people are searching for answers, they're going to need content like Red Ice. A little of all your support can go a long way. Thank you.